If you are reasonably talented as a young Indian privileged youngster, right? I mean, you've had the chance to pursue some extracurricular activities. You maybe know how to sing, or you play good sports, or maybe you take good pictures, or you can act, or you have some or other kind of talent. Right? Chances are that if luck favors you, you are going to be able to get into a top management institute. And once you're in there, you realize that your entire class is full of extremely talented people who are going to spend the rest of their lives pretty far removed from that talent. And this I read in a book by Rashmi Bansal, I think, where she said that Indian management institutes is where talent goes to die. And it is sad because around me, there were brilliant guitar players, singers, filmmakers, humorists, writers, and all of that. But in India, doing an MBA is a sure shot way of silencing the people who have questions about your future. You're doing an MBA. Oh, good. You are going to make films. You're going to be designer. You're going to be singer. You're going to be actor. Oh, you're doing MBA. Okay, good. And it's the easy way out.
So yeah, that's Jishnu Dasgupta from Swaratma, one of the biggest bands in India right now. You might know them from their single that became the OST, the original soundtrack for The Family Man, starring Manoj Bajpayee. So yeah, I'll leave a link to their song in the description below, but I'm sure you've already heard of this tune either on social media or while you were consuming that show. In the episode, there's a funny thing here. I say Family Guy instead of Family Man. I'm not sure why. But yeah, and I just go with it. Or rather, I don't think I realize that I've said Family Guy. And I think Jishnu just goes with it. And yeah, man, Jishnu is just a super stand-up guy. Such a composed person. And the kind of perspectives he brought to the conversation was just incredible. So yeah, one thing that was super interesting that I realized as I spoke to Jishnu and realized what his journey's been like. We both have had a very similar career in the sense that we both had an IT job for the longest time. And we both were testers at one point too. And then we moved on to handling products. And then finally, we both were even MBA aspirants. Only difference being, well, Jishnu went on to actually pursue it and complete his MBA. And then, yeah, we both jumped into the creative field or pursued a creative career with no clear idea of whether it was going to work or not. So, yeah, it's just great that we both had a very similar kind of career up until now, but the kind of perspectives that we both were able to bring to a table were a little diverse and a little different. But yeah, the fact that we could sit down and, you know, connect at so many levels is the reason why this conversation is filled with a lot of nuggets, and it's absolute gold in terms of the kind of perspectives that Jishnu was able to bring to the table. So yeah, this conversation is just super intriguing. And yeah, we talk about how you need to learn, if not just believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, then you need to slowly learn to believe in yourself. We also talk about something called the portfolio life, and Jishnu goes in depth about what this portfolio life really means. And then we also talk about sunk cost bias, or the sunk cost fallacy, or the sunk cost trap. So for people who have already seen my YouTube video, this is a good complementing conversation to that. And we also talk about vulnerability. How when you're kids, you don't really have a filter or in terms of just being vulnerable and putting yourself out there and emoting and expressing everything and anything. But as you grow older, it kind of slowly gets pushed back and we don't really open up, or we're not really vulnerable for so many reasons. And I think society is one big reason for that. But yeah, we talk a little bit about vulnerability as well. By the way, I've got a surprise for you. Jishnu sings a song for me. And yeah, there's a backstory for that as well. So yeah, we'll have that song play out when we come to that point, which is quite literally at the beginning of the conversation. So yeah, stay tuned for that. Man, this song is super catchy. It has my name in it. It has Against the Odds in it. And, well, it's just incredible, man. What a song. And what a person Jishnu is to have just come up with the song literally on the spot. Anyway, I don't want to give all of that away. You listen to it in the conversation. You'll understand where the song came from and what it sounds like. But, so yeah, did I tell you that we now have an audio partner in Sennheiser? Yeah, well, that happened. So we'll talk a little bit more about our collaboration a little later in the episode. And finally, Open Jam Studios is where we are coming from right now, which is our location partner or our community partner. Yeah, we'll talk a little more about Open Jam as well a little later in the episode. I guess that's pretty much it. Let's get right into the episode. This is Jishnu Das Gupta from Suratma. This is Against the Odds, and I'm your host, Akash Damodar. This show is all about inspiring people to take the unconventional path and lead a life that is truly fulfilling and rewarding. Watch and listen as talented individuals take us through their learnings, the challenges they face, and how they continuously adapt to overcome them. So Jishnu, thank you so much for finally making this happen. I mean, I've been talking to you for a while. I've been talking to Anish to try and get you here for a while. We'll probably have more people from the band also here in a bit. But dude, this is great. And first thing, it's an elephant in the room for me and something that everyone else needs to know, which is how you sang a song for me. So just to give everyone some context, I've been having a really shitty week. I told you that, which I didn't, and I think about it, right? It's only because I was vulnerable and I actually told you that I was having a shitty, you know, day. And I think we had a call lined up, right? And then I told you, dude, today is just, you know, not happening for me. I've just gone through a lot of shit here trying to set things up. It's not happening. Is it okay if we push the call to another day? And you were kind enough to say, yeah, let's do that. Not a big deal at all. But what I didn't expect is for you to literally write a song and like record it over WhatsApp and send it to me. You're the first one who's ever sang a song for me. So I'm like, I was telling my wife that, you know, he beat you to it, one. And then she heard the song and she's like, whoa, dude, I don't have a song about me. And this became, and it was so nice. You won't believe it. The next day I had, I think, a shoot. And nothing was going according to plan. And I just had the song playing in the back of my mind. I kid you not, I was singing the song. So now anytime I'm down in the dumps, I can just listen to this. You even somehow like incorporate Against the Odds into it.
Yes.
Dude, it's crazy. I'll obviously plug in the song here. I will do this in post.
Akash, Akash, the mother, and it seems like you're swelled below, my friend. Akash, Akash, the mother, and it seems like you're swelled below, my friend. The everyday can get you down, but there's nothing everyday about you now. And the odds are what you're up against. Days like these, it makes no sense. But come tomorrow's morning light, Akash the Modaran is gonna fight. We know, he's gonna fight. We know, and make it all right. We know.
Thank you so much for that. You didn't need to do that, but thank you so much. That was great.
Thanks, Akash. Thanks for that warm welcome. That was the longest welcome I've had to anything that I've ever done. It's great to be here. Thanks a lot. Looking
dude,
forward.
Awesome. So, let's, dude, I think we spoke about numerous things when we, you know, connected over a call. And I think today, too, we're going to go on at length about so many of these things. It's only when I started talking to you is when I realized we both have a very similar background. The fact that we both were testers, we both in the IT field, you start throwing IT jargons at me while we were talking. I was like, Man, it brings back memories. And like I told you on the call, should I feel elated or should I feel a little weird? And you were like, no, you should feel bad. You should definitely feel bad.
The dark past catches up again.
Exactly. Expected result.
Expected result. Actual result. So. Dear all, following up on bugs of last week.
PFA, as discussed. Oh, man. No, but yeah, but it's crazy that, you know, I mean, I see that we both are doing something in the creative line now, but mm-hmm. didn't start off there. I didn't expect you to be an engineer who's also gotten an MBA degree and all of that. I was just like a little surprised, to be honest.
Yeah. But because I think that, you know, I never thought that I would be in the creative field full time. Mm-hmm. I think the only person who probably predicted that was my English teacher in the 12th grade. Her name was Deepa Pillai. Deepa ma'am used to call her. And I used to really enjoy writing essays, you know, the ones where you're, you know, narrate or whatever or describe or whatever. Yeah. And at that time, I had gotten into P.G. Wodehouse big time. And I began to write like P.G. Wodehouse in my 12th standard essays. And I remember using all kinds of, you know, those Wodehousean analogies and, you know, quirky writing habits that you pick up from Wodehouse. And she had written in my autograph book, you know, you go to your teachers when you pass out and you know, for a message, and everyone mostly says all the best. But Deepa ma'am used to write long messages to everybody. And she had said in her message, which I still remember, is that you've got a creative streak. Why don't you explore something not on the beaten path? And this was at a time when everybody in my class of 40, 50 kids were all either going into engineering or medicine, right? Because that's all we knew at the time. Maybe there were a few who did like a bachelor's in something else, but most of us used to think that that's really the only option.
It still is a little prevalent today, too.
It is. Yeah. So, yeah, but I was pretty clear that, yeah, okay, you know, all that is fine, but where am I going to do my engineering and what am I going to do after that? So I kind of surprised myself as well when I ended up in the creative field.
Damn, that's crazy. And the challenges, of course, we'll get into that for sure. The you know, the doubts, just the risks, the challenges, everything that you spoke about.
Yeah.
Something I could definitely relate to because, well, I'm also on that path right now.
Right.
And I think the biggest challenge or hurdle most people face is the fear of the unknown, right?
Right.
When it comes to something like this, you just don't know. Because you don't know when your next paycheck or where your next salary or where your next gig, anything for that matter, is coming.
True.
Right? I think that's the biggest reason people don't even think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's, it's not like people are not creative or it's not like people don't want to explore other things. But in terms of priority, am I sorted for the next couple of months or years or whatever?
Right.
And that kind of doesn't even get them to think outside the box, like
True.
You said, right? So when you spoke about, and again, I think the first thing we should definitely get into is how you spoke about the challenges of just getting into the creative field, but figuring out monetarily how you can stay afloat.
Right.
Right. And I think as soon as you quit your job, you didn't know where your next gig was going to come. And you guys, again, you found, you know, the band itself. You guys could support each other. And you said something very interesting, which is wherever you went, you formed a band.
That's true.
Right? You formed a band literally in indoor as well.
Indoor, yeah.
So the fact that you came here and you guys found Swaratma, and you said this is the first time that you didn't have to run behind them, but you guys are supporting each other.
Yeah.
Right. So while that was great and that was fueling you, something had to fuel your stomach or literally keep you going.
Yes.
So how did you, I think you started looking into writing and all of these other things, but
what
would you say to someone who wants to get into something like this, where you have to take like calculated risks or, you know, like smart decisions where you don't just like up and about leave, but then again, you know that there's the right time to take that leap of faith, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, what do you have to say for those people? And what have you learned too in your journey?
So what I have learned, I think, is in the area of learning to believe in yourself first, based on how you feel and based on a realistic assessment of how good you are. Now, there is a need to follow your dream. There's no doubt about that. If you have something
that is driving you, if you have a talent, if you really feel like you want to explore it, there are not so risky ways of doing that even while you learn to sustain yourself or you continue to sustain yourself. And a large part of it has to do with whether you can bring yourself to be that person following your passion every day.
Mm.
Okay, the way to look at it is, I would like to look at myself as an artist, right? We are here to create music. We are here to, you know, share or create musical experiences for people that are, that resonate with it, and for ourselves as well. So I want to look at myself as an artist. But can I be an artist every day? Can I take out a little bit of time every day to be that artist, rather than saying that I'm going to wait for that perfect set of circumstances before I allow myself to be an artist?
Right.
Now, I'll give you another example of something I learned a few years ago. This was actually one of the good things that happened out of my software years. I was a part of an initiative at TCS, which was aimed at bringing together people across different teams and creating a smallness in a large organization.
Okay.
Now, to do that, what they did was put people through some team building exercises and, you know, learning from some iconic films and identifying personality traits and helping people come together. One of the things that happened to me during my assessment was that I heard the story of a painter who would paint an unremarkable landscape every single day, right? And people used to look at his work and say that, so this is nothing great. I mean, it's the same thing that you did last week, but why are you doing the same thing every day?
Yeah.
And what he said to them was that the day my inspiration strikes, I don't want my craft to hold me back. So which means that if I'm in the business of writing songs, or if I'm in the business of playing gigs, or if I'm in the business of creating soundtracks, I need to bring myself to my art every day. You show up every day, rather than saying that I'm going to only become an artist full time when everything else lines up, because everything is never going to line up.
And we have learned that.
So take a baby step, you know, do a small thing, you know, start small, do something that will give you a small amount of joy, but they're going to compound, they're going to add up. And sooner or later, you are going to be looked at by the world as an artist. But before that, you have to look at yourself as an artist. So I think that's where it lies.
Dude, that whole identity crisis is so, like, key, right? Because, like, something I read about in a book is, if you were to build habits to, you know, being, let's say, a fit person. I don't know if you've read Atomic Habits by James Clear.
I've heard about it, yes.
Yeah, so he talks about the same thing, which is you... If you think, if you first of all need to build a habit around fitness, you need to first exclaim to the world, and then before that, even exclaim to yourself,
correct,
that you're a fit person.
Right.
You're the kind of person, let's say you want to do a 10K, you're a runner. Only once you resonate with that is when you'll actually decide to pick up the boots even on the wrong day.
Right.
Right, because like you said, there's never a perfect day.
There's never going to be that. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even the most, like, we could be elated. We could have the best things line up, and we'll still probably be looking at, that could have gone a little better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, this is okay and all, but I wish that one thing in my checklist, no one was there.
Right.
If I had gotten it, it would have been awesome.
Right.
Which I, you know, is something we always look at those, you know, things not done, which is
I think it comes from the 100% syndrome, that either you get it right 100% or you fail.
Correct. It's 100 or 0.
It's 100 or 0.
Yeah.
Right? And so that prevents us from taking a shot because we may not get there.
Right.
But most times you won't get there. But taking a shot will give you much more joy than not taking it. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, so if to get back to your question on what would you say to people who are thinking of a creative pursuit or following a passion or whatever that is, bring yourself to that passion every day, even if it is for a short period of time. And sooner or later, you will find that things will line up enough for you to take that up more seriously than you could before. So
Yeah, so true. And I think what you did time and again is you started exploring music, your creative side, even before you quit your job.
Yes. Right?
You constantly got back to it. And because I think you identified as a person who creates.
Right.
Or identified as a person who's creative.
Right.
Right. I think a lot of people feel that unless you're doing this as an occupation, or once you've taken the, you know, the deep dive, right, which are all such weird jargons, but if you think about it, like, there's never, you
it's
know, it's
not
never
necessary. It's not necessary to dive as deep, you know, where there is nothing to breathe.
Exactly.
Yeah. I also believe in this thing called the portfolio life, okay, which is this thing of knowing what you want, you know, that being the single-minded person that has gone after this one thing the whole life.
Yeah. Clarity.
Clarity.
Yeah.
So this thing about, you know, you're being really clear about what you want right from the beginning and then going after it with single-minded devotion and focus. I don't know what that's like because I've never really been that person for the longest time.
Are you that person now, though?
Possibly a little more than what I used
to
be.
But never entirely, right?
But never entirely, you know, because that's why I enjoy so many different ways of expressing or knowing more about myself and the way I relate to the world. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. For some time after my engineering, I was very clear that I wanted to do a master's. I wanted to become a technical person. I was pretty close to doing my master's in electrical engineering or computer science or something like that.
In the U.S., USA.
In the U.S., no less. And but I didn't feel like doing so once I had the chance to live in the U.S. for some time. And then I came back and I figured that, yes, you know, management is the way to go because I see myself, you know, in the world of business or corporate world for the rest of my life. So I went and did an MBA and I joined one of India's best companies and I was doing great. And I was clear that this is good. This is what I want from life. But then that changed and I was then left in a different world. I found myself in a completely different world where the way you operate is completely, completely not like what you've ever been used to.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing about being a gig worker or, you know, you don't know exactly when your next assignment is going to be and all of that stuff. So I think the important thing at every time is to make peace with the fact that you may not know.
Mm. It's okay to not know.
And it's okay to not know.
Right.
It's okay to figure it out as you go. It's okay to reinvent. It's okay to, you know, recalibrate and say, okay, you know, this is who I am today. And how can I be the best that I am today is the way to look at it.
Right. And I think what you said earlier is so key, which is you don't get started after you're ready. You get started and then you slowly become ready.
Absolutely. Right? Couldn't have said it better.
So when I think about like even with this, right, with what we're doing here,
This looks ready, though.
Exactly. Thank you so much. I'll like, you know, take that as a pat on my back.
Absolutely.
But, no, dude, but you have no idea the kind of things running on my head when... let's talk about before I got started. Pre-podcast days, if that's a term again. But yeah, before I got into this, I was always fascinated by movies and films and all of that.
Right.
And I never used to look at it technically, right? But then the moment I decided, you know what, I need to create a podcast and not just a good sounding podcast, let's make it look and feel great as well.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, and I keep bugging my wife about it too. Every time I look at a show, like for instance, even you guys had your OST for Family Man.
Right.
And I'm watching Family Man and I'm looking at the lighting. Instead of focusing too much on the script, I'm like, this scene is well lit.
Nice.
Manoj Bajpayee's hair looks great. Why? Because it's lit from this side. It looks great. You know, I'm like looking at it from that aspect.
Right.
Which actually leads me to another thing, which is we all live in phases.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's certain phases we are so drawn to something. Like you said, you were drawn to your tech bit at one point.
Yeah.
Then you were drawn to the management bit at one point.
Right.
Drawn doesn't necessarily mean that that's the end all and you need to just keep doing that.
True.
Right.
True.
But it's when you started doing it and experimenting is when you realize, man, okay, this is just not my cup of tea. And yeah, you just decide.
And it's okay for it to stop being your cup of tea. Yeah. You know, I mean.
Who's deciding all this? Like, who's setting these agendas?
So I think a lot has to do with the way the education system has been structured, right? You identify kids as he's an humanities kid, science, ECMB, arts, commerce. And this is at the age of what? 16, 17, 18? How can you possibly know that you're going to be dealing with physics, chemistry, biology, maths at that age, right? There's no real way of knowing that. So which is why, you know, hopefully with this whole education policy reform and all that, hopefully some of that will change. But then it's important to remember personally that you don't necessarily have to be who you are today, and you can change that.
Yeah, so true. But yeah, I think you just get started with what you want to do. And I think this, like I said, right, like people don't take the leap of faith because of security and issues and all of that. But one thing you spoke about a lot of times is how you kept looking, like we all tend to look at our seniors or elders.
Right.
And we try to, you know, like take some kind of, you know, attributes from them. There's a good chance that if your elder brother or sister, sibling has gone to the States, you will probably do. And you spoke about an example from your life.
Yes.
Yeah, what do you have to say about that?
So yeah, the story goes that when I was in engineering college in Allahabad, NIT Allahabad at the time, there was a senior of mine who was a cool cat. You know, I mean, he got great GRE scores. He was good at extracurricular activities. And, you know, he was a great quizzer. And I used to love hanging out with him when he would allow me to hang out with him, you know, because engineering seniors are, you know, you don't just hang out with them, right? They let you hang out with them. But he was a cool guy. And I wanted to be like them. You know, these bunch of cool seniors that, you know, cracked the exams, you know, didn't make a big deal about things in college and were just having the time of their lives. So I did that and I took the exams and I was all set. I had all my SOP and my applications and everything. But yeah, you know, you never really know what that's going to be like until you actually get there and you're living it. So fortunately, I didn't get through.
Fortunately.
But I did have the chance to live in the US for a while. And that's when I figured that I don't want to live in the US. So yeah, that's...
No, thank God. I mean, imagine if you got through.
Mm-hmm.
And again, see, like in a world of social media,
mm-hmm.
someone moves to the States mm-hmm. and they're obviously going to be posting photos and videos and updates from, you know, their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at that and say, wow, that's such a flashy life and it looks great. Mm. You know, this is exactly what I aspire to be, or maybe I should get there too. But we don't know what they're actually going through.
No,
right?
We don't.
And like you said, you at least had the opportunity or chance of coming back.
Right.
Imagine having to pay like a crore in loan.
Yeah, and then being stuck there.
That's it.
Yeah, social media is a whole different ballgame, man. I mean, social media is mostly a distillation of the greatest hits of your day.
Yeah.
It does not include the bad songs that you've written. It does not include your off moments and things. It's your best foot forward every day. And that's why it's so hard, because you don't have good days all the time, right? So if you're constantly under pressure to showcase the best of every day, then you're going to be constantly looking for the best every day rather than living the day. Yeah, and that's where I think a large part of the stress comes from.
Dude, and we're always looking at, like you said, right, getting to that 100%.
Yeah.
Right? So even if something goes wrong, so let me give you an example. If we decide to, let's say, vlog,
mm-hmm.
we want to track maybe how our day went.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably would put together a vlog at the end of the day.
Mm.
But by the end of the day, you realize, hey, I've already mentioned at the beginning of the video that, hey, I have to do about 6 things today.
Mm.
And then by the end of the day, you're done about 3 of them. But 3 of them are still like pending. They're like, people will perceive me as one procrastinator. Like, should I put this out there? I don't think so. So let's scrap it. And that, you're right. It's the best foot forward.
Right.
There's no, I mean, and I think that's why a lot of people who talk a little more realistically and maybe showcase things a little more realistically. Like, for instance, Sameera Reddy has been doing a lot of that.
Okay.
So of late, mm-hmm. she's been posting literally everything at face value.
Oh.
So from post pregnancy to hair whitening and mm-hmm. everything. Like what's happening naturally is how mm-hmm. she'd like to showcase it. And she's now, you know, like people are actually able to relate to that.
Right. So that, I imagine that's hard as well though, you know.
It is. It takes a big toll on you, right? My God, man. I can't like, oh man. But dude, let's actually talk about sunk cost, because we spoke about this, but we didn't term it as such, and we obviously are the millennials and Gen Z's love to term things, right? So it's this whole sunk cost bias where we both, I personally felt that, I'm not sure about you, and I'm sure you would kind of relate
so
to that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're talking about sunk cost when you say, you mean I've spent so much time investing in this line of career, how can I possibly do something
exactly,
else, right?
Exactly.
The way I see it is that if you consider sunk cost as, you know, some kind of a loan that you need to be bound to, that, you know, you have borrowed from the future the time that you have spent in this period to invest in that future. You've borrowed that time and resource from the future. Because, you know, let's say you have to pay education loan EMI for the next whatever number of years, right? You're borrowing that from the future, saying correct. That I'm going to invest it in this.
It's not your money.
It's not your money. It's my future self's money, for example, right? You say that and you invest in it and you go with it until you realize that perhaps that's not really the thing that you wanted to do. But then you're forced to continue with it because, well, you have spent so much time and resources in doing it. So to that thought or to that feeling, what I believe is that we are constantly in a state of flux. We are not the same people every day. We are different people as time goes by. And I think it is important to accept that it is possible that I may not be the same person that I am today. The price you will pay to justify that sunk cost by not being happy every day for the next few years or months or however long it takes is a disservice to yourself. And we must find the emotional tools, let's put it that way, the emotional tools to justify, not necessarily justify, but to accept the fact that I feel differently today. And it's all right. That even if I did invest so much of time and resources, it is easy to call that a waste if you don't follow the straight and narrow path. I'll give you an example of that. People say, oh, you wasted a management seat, or you wasted an engineering seat. What is this, man? You're playing guitar and all. Why you simply went and did engineering? Could have started it that time only, no.
Oh, man.
But there is a flip side to that, right? None of anything that you learn in structured education ever goes to waste. Even if you are not paying attention in the class, even if you haven't studied for your exams, just the rigor of showing up every day in a course that you're learning or a course that you're taking instills in you something that you can possibly tap into or use or make a part of your personality in the future. So none of those experiences ever go to waste. So thinking of it as that, you know, I trained myself to become a management graduate. And if I'm not doing management work, that's my sunk cost and I need to stick with it. It's not necessarily true, because your management skills are going to come in handy no matter where you are or what you're doing.
Correct. It's part of your personality.
It's a part of your personality. You know, let's say you have a problem-solving personality. You're going to have enough problems to solve no matter what field you're involved in. So let's say you're a creative personality. Like, you know, you see connections that don't exist before. You can do that in anything. Now, I'll give you a very very different kind of example. I come from a family of space scientists. Both my father and father-in-law have been space scientists.
Whoa.
And they spent most of their working lives in literally rocket science. Right? But my father also is a musician. He's a playwright. He's a poet. He writes songs. Right? And there is a scientific reason to that, because, you know, art is often the ability to see things that don't exist now and creating something from different influences. moving forward in the world of science is also that. Mm. You know, bringing together things that possibly didn't exist before and seeing connections that didn't exist, it's pretty much the same thing. And if he was a, I mean, he was a good scientist. He retired as the deputy director of VSSC in Trivandrum. He was able to do that in his work, in his life, because I think he brought art to the world of science, and every great scientist has brought art into the world of science.
Right.
You know, so I don't know what your question was, though.
There is no question, Jishnu. Come on. No, but...
Yeah, but I think that's also one of the hallmarks of a good conversation. You know, you don't know where you started and you don't know how you reached there. You know, you're in this middle of this beautiful street or this bougainvillea on one side and this pub on the other. And like, bro, where are we?
Church Street, bro. Church Street. Oh, man.
Okay, guys, taking a small break from the conversation to talk about our collaborations and partnerships. So first and foremost, I'd like to talk about our collaboration with Hubhopper. So for people who don't know what Hubhopper is, it's a podcast providing platform, a hosting provider platform, where if you don't know where to host your show, or if you're unsure of where to get started with creating audio podcasts, then Hubhopper Studio is the way to go. If you wish to start your own podcast for free, then you can visit hubhopperstudio.com. Hubhopper is one of India's leading podcast creation platform. Start your podcast with Hubhopper Studio and get your voice heard across platforms like Spotify, Gaana, Google Podcasts, Wink Music, and more. Click on the link in the episode description or visit hubhopperstudio.com. The audio at Against the Odds is brought to you by Sennheiser. Yep, that's our audio partner. So I'm sure you already know what Sennheiser does, but for people who don't know, you've been either living under a rock or maybe you don't know what these incredible pieces of equipment can really do. So from some of the best industry standard and leading microphones to some incredible headphones to, well, you know, any kind of audio equipment, Sennheiser's got your back. I'll leave a link to pretty much all their products and a catalog in the description below for you guys to go check it out. But yeah, if you like what you're hearing here, it's all because of these microphones. So yeah, you want to go check out the MK4s and the MK8s by Sennheiser. And yeah, truly level your game up when it comes to audio and take it to the next level. Also, this episode is shot and recorded at Open Jam Studios, our community partner. So if in case you want to just quickly get started with creating content, either the audio or the video bit in a very professional looking setup, or maybe you want to invite guests over and you don't have the right place to shoot or record your content, then might I recommend Open Jam Studios. So yeah, the space has been incredibly beneficial in terms of how the place is set up, how where it's located in the city, and just how professional the workspace is. So if you guys would need a studio to get started with your creation process, then just get to it. I'll leave a link to their website in the description below. And yeah, they've got all the equipment on board. So you just need to come on down here, sit, pay for the space per hour, and then get going. It's as simple as that.
No, but what you're saying is so true, because I'm sure you can attest to this, and I personally can. Whatever I've learned from my corporate days still sticks with me today.
Yeah.
I'm able to bring a very methodical approach to creativity.
Nice.
Which I don't see a lot. Even some of the production houses I've worked with, these guys don't know how to process or plan or, you know, like do the back end bit of things.
Right.
And I think it's only when you get those boxes checked off.
Yeah.
Is when you actually, you know, like hit Nirvana.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think I brought this up in one of the previous episodes, but I think Tanmay Bhatt said this, where every other person is now getting an MBA too.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, it was like you would get an MBA because you can differentiate yourself from the others.
Right.
Now, every other person is getting an MBA.
Right.
So now these big hallmark companies, you know, these massive companies, are even startups for that matter, who have deep pockets, are looking for people who are an MBA grad,
mm-hmm.
but also have creativity.
I think that has always been the case.
Correct. And those people always are, you know, at a different level altogether.
Different level. Yeah. But there is also a flip side to it. And I'll tell you about that, because this is some of the things, this is one of the things I believe very strongly. And I've seen this happen in my MBA days. If you are reasonably talented as a young Indian, let's say privileged youngster, right? I mean, you've had the chance to pursue some extracurricular activities. You maybe know how to sing, or you play good sports, or maybe you take good pictures, or you can act, or you have some or other kind of talent. Right? Chances are that if luck favors you, you are going to be able to get into a top management institute, because the way that they grade, or the way that management institutes decide whether or not you can be a good manager, is completely arbitrary. It's based on whether you can solve mathematics problems, and that has no real bearing on math, on a management at all, for the most part. But then, and once you're in there, you realize that your entire class is full of extremely talented people who are going to spend the rest of their lives pretty far removed from that talent. And this I read in a book by Rashmi Bansal, I think, where she said that Indian management institutes is where talent goes to die.
Wow.
And it is sad, because around me, there were brilliant guitar players, singers, filmmakers, humorists, writers, and all of that. But in India, doing an MBA is a sure shot way of silencing the people who have questions about your future. You're doing an MBA. Oh, good. You are going to make films. You're going to be a designer. You're going to be a singer. You're going to be an actor. Oh, you're doing an MBA. Okay, good. And it's the easy way out. And no one's going to ask you anything further. Everyone will leave you alone. Oh, he's doing MBA. Oh, then
must be sorted.
Man. So if you're able to, you know, I don't know, if you can still remain true to yourself, then it's a blessing. But for that, you know, you need to know what you want to be true to, you know. So,
dude, that's so true. And so I'm also creating a couple of standalone YouTube videos alongside this, which again is about, you know, leading a meaningful life and all of that, just because I'd like to now play with cameras and, you know, like shoot nice and make it look nice. And the feedback for the most been good.
Great.
But while I was doing that, again, I'm trying to uncover and dive deep into certain topics.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was how you the only way to excel at work is for you to look at everything else apart from work,
mm-hmm.
ensure that you're kind of satisfied, your levels are great in terms of, you know, you're doing focusing time on your hobbies,
mm-hmm.
you're, you know, you want to spend time on a side gig,
mm-hmm.
you fitness, everything else. Mm-hmm. The moment you do that, work also kind of sorts itself out.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you are onto something there.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you from my personal experience, days that I don't feel good, days that I'm down, or days that I'm not, you know, quote unquote, with it.
Mm.
Everything goes badly on that day.
Okay? For sure.
For sure.
There's no like two ways about it.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, I'll do my work well, but then I won't be, I don't have the energy to practice or play guitar. Everything is equally bad.
Yeah.
But on days that are good, it doesn't matter how packed my schedule is. Everything goes well. You know, I get to practice, I get to jam, I get to record, I get to, you know, be with my family, I get to do my content writing. Everything goes well on those days. So I wish there were more such days, but I think there is possibly something to it. You know, I mean, how do you set yourself up for something like that? Or, and no doubt the bad days will be there. How do you, you know, how do you last those bad days without being too hard on yourself? Perhaps there's something there as well.
For sure. And I think, so yeah, so what I was actually talking about is the fact that we're never solo faceted.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have so many different, like you said, you we live in phases, dude. Like mm-hmm. there's certain years we're just like, you know, we're running behind something else, and mm-hmm. then the next second, you know, you suddenly become like a creative person. And you're like, you know, suddenly wear like a kurta, juba, and start walking around like writing poems and
right.
You know, that's just a phase, right?
It could happen.
So same thing happens on a day-on-day basis as well. I see it.
Mm.
If you like to spend time
in maybe playing badminton. I like playing badminton.
Mm.
But, and I've noticed, like you said, if I start my day off by playing a good game of badminton, chances are everything else kind of falls into place.
Ah.
If I wake up at so-and-so time and I go for my walk and I'm listening to a nice podcast, then the morning set, everything else kind of goes
nice.
To, you know, it's, and so I've been doing more of trying to get my first couple of hours in my day right.
Nice.
So that way, and so I'll tell you, so I'm this classic overthinker. Okay. So I'm constantly like thinking about ways I can optimize my day. And the way I see it is just like you, you said you had a flair for writing when you were younger.
Right.
And your teacher told you this.
Yeah.
It was the same thing with me. I loved writing. I, and, but then I was, you know, I was kind of put in this bucket of the guy who would go behind tech.
Oh.
Right? Or the guy who is very street smart.
Okay.
But then there can be an overlap.
Right, there can.
Yeah, but we're never told that.
Yeah.
That's something that's constantly hidden from us as kids. And as immature kids, right? Like you said, at 15, 16, 17, we're just constantly looking for one thing to associate yourself with.
Mm.
You could be an aspiring footballer. Or you could be a not so aspiring corporate guy, like, you know. So,
right.
So when I got into back to creating all of this, I got back to writing, and dude, I things are just flowing. I'm just typing, and it feels great.
Nice.
And I've been exploring that bit. So now I've made it a point to spend like the first 3 hours of my day, which sounds like an absurd thing to do with a so-called morning routine, because everyone's talking about get to work.
Get
or like
to work.
Go sure. Work out or like do whatever else, right? My workout is not even in this in these 3 hours. I wake up, maybe go for a quick walk,
right.
Come back, and I read a book for half an hour, 45 minutes, get to writing for another hour and a half.
Nice.
Then I know I've done everything with my day. When I was at my corporate job.
Mm.
Dude, the first, I used to get to work, and I've spoken about this in other videos as well. I get to work at 6. 6:30 in the morning.
Are you serious?
No one's at in the office. There's a hearty coffee. I go get a nice filter coffee, sit down. I used to work on the startup I was building.
Oh.
And then my first call's at 10 o'clock. So then I got my bases sorted.
Nice.
I don't care if the day goes to, you know, to dogs. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And then, yeah. So I think there's something to that. It's about, I think, even if you wake up on the wrong side of bed, there are ways you can, you know, like get these small wins to kind of, you know, multiply.
Yeah.
And one more thing you spoke about is how you found other people, especially in your band, and, you know, like finding like-minded individuals.
Right.
And you spoke about the same thing with an MBA class.
Sure.
You
yeah.
found so many people.
Yeah.
For people who are looking to maybe build a band or doing anything in a group,
mm-hmm.
maybe even building a startup or doing whatever, right, finding like-minded people, how do people go about doing that? Because it's a big challenge, right?
It is.
And
it
especially, is. I want to talk about vulnerability next, which is something we spoke about a lot. But we are never vulnerable, right? As adults,
right.
Like, we would never open up. So no one would be able to gauge how you're going to be when, you know, shit hits the
correct.
Fan.
Right.
So how do you find these people?
Wow, that's a lot to say there. let's start with this.
Yeah, that's why it's a long form podcast.
It is a long form. Yeah. Just getting warmed up. So let's start with this. I think that after having played in a band for what now, 12, 15 years, a lot of teamwork is like being in a band, right? I would say that even finding co-founders to share an idea and enthusiasm for that with is a lot like finding members of a band, right? And working in teams is like finding, like, you know, finding your rhythm or your groove with other members in the band. And it is not necessarily true that you only form bands with like your childhood friends or college friends. That's not what happened in Swarathma at all. And in fact, when you said, you know, the idea of having met people who became a part of your journey, I think I've been really fortunate to be, to have met the guys in the band Swarathma and how they have constantly inspired me personally. And we've all been inspiring each other to remain our best creative selves and continue on this journey, which you know, the landscape of which continues to change, right? I mean, the world of music that was there when we were starting out is very, very different from where it is now.
2 years ago, pre-COVID.
Exactly. Right? So we've stuck around and we've more importantly found that shared space of joy that we can all aspire to contribute to. So I think... if
you're looking to find collaborators, it has to start with being open to a playlist that you may not necessarily like. Let me put it this way, right? Your favorite playlist will have maybe some artists or songs or genres. Someone else's playlist may have something different. And that's exactly what happens in our band. We cannot possibly stand each other's playlists, but we're all playing the same notes. We're all playing the same beats. And it is that difference in people's playlists that actually allows you to create something new and fresh. So the idea is to acknowledge that if you are looking to collaborate with somebody, that person is likely to be different from you. But it is in that difference that you will find something remarkable.
Hmm.
And being able to listen to each other is also very, very important. In fact, what I say to young bands when we talk to them is that playing in a band is not about playing as much as it is about listening to what the other person's playing. And if you can do that in a corporate setting, in a startup setting, or in any other kind of team, if you're able to listen, then chances are that you are going to be doing better than if you were just doing your own thing.
Man, dude, this is so well said. So well put. We're all societal beings who's, you know, like interacting with one another. So the moment you kind of cut that bit off and you know, like, you know, take it or leave it kinds, which I think is like the kind of reaction to most things when we have like a very strong feeling about something.
Yeah.
So like you said, your playlist is something you like, you know, put up there. Or it's maybe certain traits. You're constantly looking at building a company, maybe sustainability.
Mm.
Or you want to do something in an F&B.
Mm.
But then, you know, you're not thinking outside the box. But the only way you think outside the box is if you get someone else who's a little...
Someone else who's not in the box.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Right? And it's hard to step outside your own box. Right? So all you need to do is poke some windows and you're fine.
Oh, man. No, but dude, but even finding these people... And now let's get into vulnerability now that we're here.
Mm-hmm.
What we spoke about on the phone is so like... Not just reminiscent, it's just how things are, which is when you're the kid, you have absolutely no filter.
Right.
Or you don't think too much about saying what's on your mind.
Right.
Or perceiving things in a particular way. Or if you feel vulnerable, you say it, you cry, you show, you emote, you do all of that.
Right.
And as you grow older and older, it's how we conform.
It's squeezed out of you.
Yeah.
By the way that you are expected to behave. And I have seen that happen in front of my eyes. As a father, right? I know how my older son was when he was 5-6 years old, and I see how he is now at the age of 11 or 12. He has learned to navigate the world. He has learned to not say things like it is because it's hurtful or it's insensitive or it's, you know, rude. He's learned because we've taught him. We have beaten the spontaneity and vulnerability out of that after those moments. And we, as parents, we do a brilliant job of it, of raising emotional machines who are functional in all situations. But the price that we all pay, and it's happened to us as well, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Don't say it like it is. The price that we pay for that is to not be able to say something that's happening to us, not be able to express. And confusing that for strength, confusing, you know, emotional control as a sign of, you know, being a man or being macho or, you know, not showing your emotions as being something you should aspire to and all of that. That's where all the vulnerability probably goes. And it is only in the space where you can share what is actually going on with you. That's where you can make progress in any kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And we have felt that in the relationship with our songs. If we have to write a song about something, the important thing to do is to feel strongly about what you're thinking of writing about. Right? And that's actually one of the reasons why love songs are so universal in their appeal. Because heartbreak in Italy is not very different from heartbreak in Nagarpalia, I guess.
right? It's the same thing. So it's universal in that sense, which is why you can vibe with a song about heartbreak no matter where it is from the world. So being able to feel strongly about something and being able to express it functionally is where I think the future lies as people that are looking to grow and be more contributing to their circles or to the world.
Because I think I spoke about this with you, which is when I was younger, I never used to express emotion, at least after a certain point. Not because I don't think it was parents, it was just maybe the kind of kids I was with or, you know, the circle or whatever, right? But that I can see, you know, directly impacting who I am today. There's a lot of, you know, holding back on, you know, way, you know, in terms of expressing certain things. But the more I've noticed another thing, which is, it's the more I've gotten into a creative side of things, I've become a little more vulnerable for some reason. I'm not sure why.
I can tell you why. It's because on days, and this is my guess, on days that you allow yourself to be, you are likely to hit more creative highs than on days where you are like bottling it up. You know, because only when you uncork that, you know, bottle of Sprite.
Emotional bottle of Sprite with a cork on it. Which bottle is this?
I think the sweetness is in that release in some sense, you know.
Yeah.
So and that brings me to the song that I wrote for you, you know. You know, the day that you wanted to reschedule that meeting, you could have just said that, look, I don't think I can do this today. I've been a bit busy. I've had a busy day. And can we do this another day? I'd have said yes, and that would have been the end of the matter.
Yeah.
But you said that everything that could possibly have gone wrong went wrong today. I remember reading that. And I remember feeling a little sad for you, even though I don't know you. I didn't know you at the time, right? But I could identify or I could relate with having been through a day where nothing's gone right. And it was just something that I was noodling around with as a part of my regular practice. That I thought, you know, what if there was this little tune that could capture what I would tell you if I was your friend and I heard about your day, and I would be like, hey man, yeah, shit happens, dude. So it's okay.
Yeah.
Chin up. It'll be a better day tomorrow. So, and that just came out in the way it did. I'm glad you liked it.
Dude, the song's great. It should be like, it should be on your next album. It was incredible. I mean, it was so catchy, and man, so the day everything didn't go according to plan, the next day kind of topped that, and it became, you know, even worse. And it didn't matter because I could, you know, like, I was listening to a song, I was like, yeah, I gotta do it. And the only person I keep confiding and talking to is my wife. I'm just constantly, and she's just like, relax, you're overthinking, just relax. But, and I'm just singing this song to myself. But dude, that was just great. But yeah, so I think that whole being vulnerable or talking, emoting in a functional way.
Yeah.
It's very, very important. And that goes back to you finding other people too, like-minded folks who you can work with as well.
Right.
Because only when you kind of get to that point and they see that, okay, this person is in it for, you know, like for so and so reasons. Like for instance, I'll give you a very simple example. When I put up my, I had to get interns for my show, right? They know the kind of the level at which we're creating right now.
Right.
It's not too easy. But then they want to learn. I said, if you don't know anything about video, don't know anything about audio, but you want to learn,
this
great. That's all that matters.
Right.
And everyone's like, yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to do all this. And I said, then we had another role for digital marketing for the show. And I was like, again, if you have no idea, if you've just, you know how to use a phone and you know exactly how these platforms at least to a certain degree work, or if you don't know that, but you have that drive, great. We got so many requests. How many requests? And we give them a simple way to kind of clean up that topsoil, or, you know, just like get to actually understand who's interested. we asked them to drop an email with their resume and a reason as to why you think you're a good fit.
Okay.
They had sell 60%. As simple as that, because they don't have the trust. They don't think, you know, that they belong here. Among that 40% as well, we give them an assignment before we take them on. This is not like some big company or an MNC. It's like on, you know, literally like you, I'm calling you here to stress, share my stress. Like, you know, that's the setup.
Right.
And again, I give them a task. They can get back to me with, even if the deliverable sucks monkey balls, if it's not even good, it's okay. But at least you've delivered. They're like about 38% just like no one even responds to that email.
Right.
And there itself, I know. The same thing.
But you found good people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I did. And there have been some people who have stuck with me for a long time.
Nice.
Some people have come for like smaller interim periods. But at least we only take on people who actually want to do this.
Right.
Because it's not going to be a regular setup where I sit down with them, have a daily morning call, and then we go through this, and then we sit down, and we may not even meet in person, all of that. But it makes, like, when you can really function on your own, where we tell you, this is the directive, can you do it? Great. That's it. And you have the drive to do it? Great.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And I'll tell you another thing. The same thing applied for, and ever since I think we crossed that 16th or 17th episode mark, we had a huge influx of guests.
Nice.
Huge.
People wanted to be on it.
Be on the show, because it's good PR, right? And we're producing it well. It doesn't cost them a dime.
Right.
And well, it's my effort and time, which I'm okay at spending if it adds value to a show.
Correct.
But the number of people responding on, especially on Instagram, again, the same route works.
Nice.
Just ask them to drop an email. About 60% out. They don't even follow.
Right.
And then, like, even among that, 40%, like, why do you think you're a good fit? Can you just take a look at our show?
Right.
Nothing. So, you know, and on the contrary, I've had guests on the show, and I gladly put it out there. I had Anil Abraham on the show, who reached out to me. He's such an accomplished guy, but he reached out to me saying, hey, dude, I'd love to be on a show. I said, sure. I looked at the Common Connects. I'm like, yeah, you seem to be. And he's doing a lot of things. He's a doctor, he's a stand up comic, he's an actor, he's everything. He's in a lot of Malayalam movies, and he's killing it. And I said, so can you just let me know why you think... He sent me 3 emails with like the entire list, like some massive ass portfolio.
Right.
Wow. And that conversation was incredible.
I can imagine. Right.
So, but I think that, you know, when you're intentional about what you want to do and you can be vulnerable too at the same time is when you find those people.
I think this brings me to something that I strongly identify with. And I can say that this is one of the things that I've learned over the years. And that is about what I like to call the compass of intent. Right? This sounds like it should probably be in some other kind of book. But
One of those jargons. Yeah.
Right? But what I mean by that is, where do your intentions lie? And that's exactly what you ask when you say that, look, it sounds like you want to be on my show, but can you prove to me or can you show me what it is that you see and where you want to take it? And to do that, they have to demonstrate that compass of intent by saying that, hey, you know, this is what I mean when I say I want to be on your show. And that applies for anything, right? That applies for any kind of a deal or any kind of a contract or any kind of an assignment.
Right.
You can tell when you talk to somebody whether their heart is in it or not. And I think one of the skills that you need as you're growing up as a professional in anything is being able to gauge whether the people you're talking to are actually going to do what they're saying that they're going to do based on either the antecedents or the way that your meeting has gone or just how you feel about it.
Right.
So these are, I think, some of the things that we need to be teaching young professionals or even in school or college, things like how to negotiate, things like how to be vulnerable or building emotional tools to handle failure or stress or
personal finance,
taxes. Yeah. So things that these are things that you actually learn along the way, you know, from people that are around you. But yeah, I think being able to gauge someone's intent will definitely make your life a lot easier.
Dude. And it's not, there's no hard and fast rule to it. There's no way to like just say, yeah, this guy definitely falls in that bucket. But like you said, right, and I've been toying over this idea of, and I think a lot of people get me wrong when I say, hey, we'd like to take you on as an intern, or we'd like to take you, you know, we'd love for you to be part of our team. But please understand, this entire thing is bootstrapped. We don't have any money. I'm spending my time and effort, blood, money, everything into this. I'm investing into the entire show. We can't pay you right now, but if you can show us promise for maybe 2 months of unpaid work, and you're really in it to learn, and you're really in it to do something, then 3rd month onwards, when it does flow, well, we can give you what you need. Or maybe 4 months, or whatever it takes, right? Half the people find that to be literally obnoxious. They think, like, oh, how dare you get free work out of me? That's the mentality, because that's how we're primed, right? Which, I only mean this in the best of intentions.
Right.
Because I shouldn't be wasting your time, you should be wasting my time. But that gauging that compass of intent, like you said, or understanding where this person's heading, you might get the feeling of that person, but when it's when shit actually hits the fan is when you realize whether this guy's doing anything about it. And I've realized that unless you get to it practically, you'll never properly be able to tell. But yeah, I think to this whole vulnerability thing is just, it's just crazy, because a lot of people, and you see a lot of these, I see a lot of these videos on my feed that talk about why you're lonely, why you don't have any friends, which a lot of people are able to kind of, you know, like, kind of resonate with. And I think that is the kind of age we live in, right? We have just some or one or two of our best friends or people we go to and confide in and all of that. Or maybe not even that.
Correct.
And you just have a bunch of acquaintances.
Right.
And that's because we can't open up like you just said.
Right.
But yeah. But, you're thinking about something. You're just
it's just, I'm just reflecting on my own experiences in life that it's absolutely true that we are brought up with this conviction that you have to project a life that is perfect, and that it is hard to be seen as someone who isn't, who doesn't have it all together. And it's a matter of finding the people that are close enough with whom you can be that imperfect person. And if you can be that person, then you will find a way out of that situation, and you will be able to, you know, co-create something that is more beautiful for tomorrow. But for that, you have to first accept that, okay, you know, things are not going well now, and it's all right.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're never taught how to be vulnerable. I think I had read one or two of Mark Manson's blogs. I think Mark Manson writes better blogs than he writes books, but some of his blogs have really, really been very, very interesting reads, where he talks about being able to share a little bit of yourself that is gray, or that is not super shiny and perfect. And the truth in a relationship often lies in those gray areas, which you can shine a light on together rather than it remaining in the shadows all the time. Damn, I should write this down.
Well, we have it recorded. But by the way, Mark Manson's creating content now. He's got like a YouTube channel. And he's been creating for a while now.
Correct.
But yeah. So Jishnu, this was great. I think this is a good place to wrap things up. We'll obviously talk about more the next time we have you here, which is something I ask of all my guests.
Sure.
Once we hit a milestone, we'll have all our guests back.
Mm.
And we'll talk about so many other things. Sure. But, so yeah, before we wrap up though, two things. One, what would you like to put out there for as a last message, or something that maybe you could have spoken about it or maybe not, but what's the last message you want to put out there for the community?
Wow. Okay.
This is just to put you on the spot. It's happened a lot of times in the past, but yeah.
Let's talk about odds, you know, and the fact that very often it appears that the odds are stacked against you. But it is those odds that
make you who you are going to be. If those odds did not have to be overcome, you wouldn't have had to sharpen your proverbial knives or your spears or your tools to become what you need to be. So it is okay if things don't always go the way that they are meant to in your head. Because there is, I'm sure, some kind of plan. And all you need to do is show up every day. And you'll get there. There's this thing about, you know, I brought this together in my head from a number of different sources, that in our lives, we often consider happiness as a moving target, right? So if I ask you today, are you happy? Chances are, if you ask me, I might say, yeah, but, you know, I wish just this little thing.
There's always a but.
Yeah, there's always a but, right? So, and then because happiness is this beatific Zen state where everything is perfect, you know, everything is rosy, and that's when I finally allow myself to be happy, right? 10th standard, get good marks, then do whatever you want. 12th standard, get good marks, do whatever you want, you'll be happy. Yeah? College, get into a good college, whatever you want.
Company,
get a good company, do an MBA, whatever, get married, whatever, have kids, whatever. You're just chasing another milestone or a goalpost, which neatly society will put a few hundred miles away from where you are right now, and saying that, oh, you can't be happy just yet because you got to do all of these things to get to this point, and then you will be allowed to be happy, okay? And you'll be like, okay, and then you start running again. Instead, that's fine, and that's the way society works, and actually it's necessary, because if you don't have those goals, then society will function probably very differently, and that's okay. But instead of burdening yourself with the word happiness, take a much smaller word, joy. Joy, by its definition, is very much more infinitesimal, attainable, small. It could be anything from a good cup of coffee to a look you exchange with someone you love, or anything of that nature. And all you probably need to do is fill your day with attainable joys in your long marathon quest for happiness. And suddenly at the end of the day, you'll be like, hey, these attainable joys pearl necklace looks pretty good to me for today. Yeah. And that's fine. So just stick with the small things. And you're likely to, you know, end up reaching those milestones without feeling burnt out of, you know, I've, you know, done all of this and got here, and now you're saying I have to go somewhere else. What is this for? But then, so the journey has been fun because you've just had fun along the way with these small, small things. So if you ask me, as a creator of content, and a participant in a podcast, you know, what is your vision of happiness in this field? And probably I'll say that, you know, only when I speak at TED, or, you know, only when I'm this keynote speaker at Harvard, that's when I'll be happy, truly. That's when I'll unlock my true potential. But what about drinking some coffee and hanging out with some against the odds people just this afternoon, you know? Will it bring you joy? Yeah. And it is. It's been great. You know, so every day.
Take it one at a time.
Plug away.
Yeah. My God. No, Jishnu, no one could have said it better than you. That was crazy. And now people have to, of course, people know Sudhatma, people know you. But if you had to send people online, where should we send them?
Yeah, so Swaratma is what I primarily do with my life. I play bass and I manage the band. You could listen to our music everywhere on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Gaana, Wink, the whole works. Just look for Swaratma. And yeah, hang out with us on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook.
Kick ass. Shnu, thank you so much for making this happen, man. This was awesome. I had a ball, and you clearly said you've had a ball as well, yes, with Against the Odds, which is awesome. But thank you so much, man.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure. Absolutely.
So yeah, that's episode 41 for you people. And I still can't believe that Jishnu sang a song for me. I'll probably put that as the outro song instead of our usual theme song. But yeah, it's just too surreal. Jishnu, if you're listening, once again, you have no idea how much this means to me, man. Thank you so very much. Like I said, you're the first person and the only person to have ever written a song for me. So it really, really means the world. Yeah, if you guys would like to use the song and create some snippets or pieces of content, then go right ahead, because it's my song. Yeah, I can say that because it has my name in it and he literally wrote it for me. So go ahead, use the song if you'd like to. And if you found value in the show or this episode, then you can do a couple of things to support the show. You can maybe share the episode with your friends or family members or someone who you feel could benefit from a conversation such as this, or maybe some of our other conversations as well. So yeah, maybe just sharing the episode over WhatsApp or just sending across a link to a couple of groups or a couple of friends will go a long way in getting the show in front of more people. Also, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or maybe you have an Apple device, then what you can do is just head on down to Apple Podcasts, earlier formerly known as iTunes, and leave a rating and review. Ratings and reviews help get the word out there. It helps with the algorithm so our show gets more easily discovered. And I'd like to spread these conversations and the value that I'm able to bring out from these conversations as far and wide as possible. So yeah, if you can leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, it'll mean the world to me. And if you are listening to this, or rather watching this on YouTube, and you still haven't hit the like button, dude, why? It's literally an hour's worth of your time and you haven't even hit the like button. I'm assuming you like it and that's why you're here. So yeah, hit the like button and maybe even leave a comment as to what you liked about today's episode. I guess, yeah, that's pretty much it. If you'd like to connect with me on Instagram, go ahead, DM me your thoughts. I take questions and a couple of thoughts on and feedback as well on what the show was like, and connect with me there. I said that that's pretty much it, and then I went on to plug in Instagram again. It's because I don't know what are the bits I'm supposed to be talking about as part of the outro, so I'm just trying to wing it, and I'm looking at a couple of these bullet points I have here for each episode. But yeah, if you'd like to connect with me on Instagram and diss me on this, please go ahead and do that. Either ways, let's roll that song of mine, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Cheers. Every day about you now, and the odds are what you're up against. On days like these, it makes no sense. But come tomorrow's morning light, Akash the Modern is gonna fight. We know he's gonna fight. We know, and make it all right. We know.